So we would like to welcome you to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. We are one of a number of international lodges that has only one purpose, and that is to spread broadcast the teachings of Theosophy. These teachings were put down in writing. We're very lucky about that, that we have them in writing back in the mid-1800s. Because prior to that, everything was transmitted verbally and to memorization. So these great teachers of ours in the mid-1800s put it down in writing so that we may have them today. And with the internet, these teachings are being spread broadcast even further because there are people out there looking and they find it. And unfortunately, there may not be a lodge in their area, but they are still studying it, and they are peopling the astral with these good ideas. And these ideas are mainly to form a nucleus of universal brotherhood, and that is the primary purpose for these lodges, is for the members, the students, to prepare themselves, ourselves, by study and otherwise, to be the better able to help and teach others. And we put forth these ideas here in the Philadelphia Lodge 2 days a week, as now on Sundays. The doors open at 10:30. The meeting runs from 11 until 12. And we are, that for this month of August, today is September, right, thank you. Last week we looked at some words on daily life, and we're doing self-development this summer. And we were looking at different articles by Madame Blavatsky and Mr. Judge. And last week we looked at Madame Blavatsky's article, Some Words on Daily Life. Today we're going to be looking at Mr. Judge's article, Meditation, Concentration, Will. On Wednesdays, we will be finishing up the Bhagavad Gita this month, and the class runs from 7:45 until 9. The building opens at 5:30. The library, which is a reference library, is open from 5:30 until 7:30, with the book table open at 6:30 until 7:30. And the book table is open before and after all of our meetings. I think that's it. The lodge is financially sustained entirely by voluntary contributions. Its activities depend similarly on voluntary offerings in time and work. All are invited to participate, but no obligation is imposed or implied. And we just, in regards to, we do not pass a basket around, but we just want to remind everybody that winter's coming, and this is a big old building. So any help is appreciated. So as we said, today we're going to be looking at Mr. Judge's article on meditation, concentration, and will. And we will have a student summarize it, and then after that we will have discussion and questions and answers.
Good morning. So for those of us who haven't spent too much time learning or practicing meditation, this might help. This class and other theosophical literature gives a broad outline on what it's all about. But in particular, Mr. Judge in this article mentions Patanjali's yoga aphorisms. And if ever there were a kind of a theosophical how-to book for meditation, you might consider taking a look at this. Now, the topic here is meditation, concentration, and will. And there are many students who give attention to this topic and want instruction and want direction. perhaps more so than any other theosophical topics. And then we talk about the three: meditation, concentration, and will. So let's take a look at meditation first. We can divide it into two topics or two sorts of meditation. One is the kind of meditation where we periodically, perhaps daily, sit down, take the time, and practice meditation. And the other form of meditation that we'll hear here in the lodge, what we'll hear about, is what's known as a lifetime's meditation. A lifetime's meditation is said to be a single thread of intention and desire running throughout our lives. The first type, the periodic type, practiced usually at a set time every day if possible, as addressed in Patanjali's Yoga Aphorisms. This book gives the particulars for the environment in which we meditate, and if we follow the guidance in the book, we'll see results in our meditation. This book is the theosophical source for instruction on how to do it. That subtle thread of the lifetime, the life's meditation, is practiced by many, by the philosopher, by the mystic, by the artist, even by the businessman. It's all really just a matter of what does an individual direct his attention to? What common thread of thought does an individual direct his attention to? And it's not, Mr. Judge talks about it, we'll see in the article, that a businessman may be focused on gaining more and more wealth constantly throughout his life, and sometimes take a breather, look around him and say, wow, what's really a better purpose in life, and aspire to that. But then, unless he fights it, he'll go right back into it. So there are certain tendencies that we develop in our lifetime's meditation that we should be mindful, thoughtful, and reflective about. What about concentration? Can we hope concentration into reality for ourselves? Can we wish for it? No. Concentration also is divided into two types. The first, he says, is the use of an already acquired power on a fixed occasion, kind of like that meditation, concentration. The other is a deep, constant practice of a power that is already in our possession. And concentration is not memory. However, when we concentrate, typically memory is waked up when we try to concentrate and can often be a distraction to our concentration. And then finally, the will. Although this topic is not typically treated in theosophical works very much, it seems to be inferred by Patanjali in his aphorisms. Will is universal. It belongs to every natural kingdom. Therefore, we can see that it's a colorless power devoid of qualities or morality per se, and it takes man to add moral quality to his particular will. The will acts according to desire. The child, the savage, the lunatic, the wicked, they may all exhibit a stronger will than the average person. Why is that? Well, because a wicked person may have very intense desires, and this more intensely directs the will. The lunatic has fewer desires, and the fewer desires that a person has, the more will be directed into those desires. The savage who lives a more simple life is undistracted by the life of a person in the Western societies, and so he can better focus his will. So the fewer desires we have, the stronger we can make our will. And let those few desires be high, pure, altruistic, and they will give us a strong will.
Thank you. To start the meeting off, can you hear me?
Yes.
To start the meeting off, then, we just want to go through some quotations that will help describe. To help describe what meditation, concentration, and will are. And the first one is a quote from Mr. Crosby, and he has a very enlightening article called The Culture of Concentration. And Mr. Judge has a very lengthy article, Culture of Concentration, so not to get these two mixed up. But Mr. Crosby says that meditation or use of attention in the direction of anything we wish to do. I'm sorry, this is concentration, not meditation. Sorry. But meditation is the bridge, method, or vehicle by means of which the student consciously and at will passes into a chosen state or condition, there sees and acts consciously and at will consciously returns. Meditation is never from below upwards, nor from within outwards. It begins and ends with the operation of the spiritual will, of which meditation is an instrument. And then Mr. Crosby's idea of concentration is the use of attention in the direction of anything we wish to do consistently and persistently has long been recognized as the most effective means of arrival at the full expression of our powers and energies. Then one on the idea of will. Will basically is a power of aspiration, a channel through which the influence of the divine or spiritual principle, the real man, may irradiate the lower personality. So it's basically, being open to the movement of your higher nature. And also it says, the uplifting of the soul towards its divine source, the desire of the particularized self to become one with universal self. So we'll take any of your questions then. Yes.
I know the statement sounds very simple, but it's very difficult. We just need to have less desires. Well, between that and the way one's trying to quiet the mind is going crazy from one to another thing. If we're supposed to have less desires in general, where should we start? Would it be with controlling the mind?
So how would we begin then to decrease the desires that we have, which are actually distractions from what we need to be doing? Did you?
We would think the very first thing is to review, what do I consistently want, mm-hmm. and then why do I want it? Was I taught that in my home or my education? Do I really want it, or am I following somebody else's program?
Yes, we need to prioritize in our minds what it is that we really want, what it is that we have, and what does it take for us to get to the point where we have whittled down all those superficial desires. And in regards to the mind, we think it's like things have to be done at the same time. We're not looking at, okay, we get rid of the desires and then we do this and then we do that. It doesn't say that we cannot continue to try to meditate, to try and concentrate while we're trying to get rid of our desires. Because we can concentrate on getting rid of the desires. So it's we think that the mind will go along, you know, as we look at what we have and as we look at what is really important, as we put universal brotherhood, you know, priority in our lives, that will help us control the mind. And so it's like a circle. We go around and round. But we think if one's motive is pure in regards to why they're doing this, then we think the mind will slowly elevate and everything come along with it. Did you ever hear that?
Right. Well, kind of it was said, it's almost like, let's not wait until we're saints before we begin to meditate, so then we can only meditate perfectly. Meditation is the process, we think, where we gain the discernment between what's important and what's not important.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we grow in that, the more we recognize the value of things that we desire or the lack of, or the, you know, the lack of waste, or the lack mm-hmm. of value of other things. So that helps us to kind of shed or skin the onion.
Mm-hmm. And we know in some of the writings, it talks about even if you only begin with 2 minutes a day to sit and concentrate, because, and this is something that we were hoping was going to come out, so we'll put it out now. The difference between concentration and meditation. We would just like to put it out to the class as to, you know, is it the chicken and the egg, or do you have to do one before the other, that kind of a thing. And so we can just be on the same page as to, because sometimes it seems like it's concentration, sometimes it seems like it's meditation. And so we would just like to put it out. Yes?
Well, you can't have meditation unless mm-hmm. you have concentration. Granted, you can concentrate on anything and everything in the universe, but you can't meditate if you can't focus your mind. So meditation is both the chicken and the egg, and so is concentration.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to begin where we are weak, and usually that is in concentration.
Mm-hmm.
We're very distractible, and today's world is just the greatest temptation.
Yes. Yes.
In some ways, it's like the difference between the white light that passes through the prism and the array of colors that we perceive that come out of the
mm-hmm.
prism. If there's one perceiver, one perception, that's like the white light. And passing through the karmic conditions we've set up, we can have an array of different degrees of perception and awareness or states of mind. So it's a sliding scale
mm-hmm.
or a kaleidoscope or a rainbow, however we want to image that for ourselves.
And that's a beautiful image when you think of a rainbow and liking it to meditation, because it, when we're truly meditating, that's when we see the colors. So that we think that was a good one. And another idea that was brought up with that last comment was karma, because we may just be, it might be a karmic lesson in persistence that we keep trying to concentrate and it keeps getting interrupted, we keep getting distracted from it. But if that happens to be our karmic lesson, then we wonder if the lesson is persistence, that to keep trying. In the back.
What is meant by the state of one-pointedness?
Mm. The state of one-pointedness, what does it mean? And we believe that is something that the Buddha had put forth, and it's mainly trying, you know, not going too high, not going too low, but just trying to focus one's mind in one direction, on one thing. And in regards to meditation and concentration, especially with concentration, it has to do with prioritizing getting rid of the distractions, whether they're too exciting or boring, so that one can just stay pointed in that one direction, that one thing. In regards to Patanjali's, on that note, this will cover will as well. To use the will, which is also a distinct power from the mind and brain, in such a way that instead of permitting the mind to turn from one subject or object to another, just as they may move it, we shall apply it as a servant at any time, for a long period as we wish, to the consideration of whatever we have decided upon. And he also talks about, what is the word that he uses? Modification. Because when we think about something, Patanjali likens it to the mind modifying itself about what that item is that we are focused on. And this is, he's saying that this is something that can be a distraction if our mind is full of whatever that idea is. So we need to be able to have more of a will to pull it away from this modification idea so we can focus and be one-pointed. Yes?
I think during the New Age, many things were talked about. And this whole one-pointedness, I think, was expressed in the understanding of be here now. Hmm. You know, just being in the moment. And that's how the application in our life we use. The concept you can understand, but then you need to apply it. And how do we apply it? We just focus on the moment.
The idea of one pointed is so huge that we are thank you for that, for adding that point about being in the moment and not looking at the past with regret and not being fearful of looking towards the future with anxiety or trepidation, but to be now and enjoy the moment and be here with your loved ones, family, and the people around you. Did you have a follow-up?
Well, you can only try to enjoy the moment.
Okay. We can try. Let's be optimistic.
Yes.
In the green?
When I think about the concentration and meditation, I always think about what's my desire. My desire is to meditate. And so that's the goal, and the tool I use for that is concentration.
Mm. Yeah. Can we ask you to repeat that, because we had a hard time hearing?
You didn't hear me?
No.
Oh, I said when I think about meditation and concentration,
mm-hmm.
I think about the goal is to concentrate. Oh. I mean, to meditate, and the tool I use for that is concentration.
Yes, we can look at the goal to be meditation, but we need to be able to concentrate first before we go on to the next step.
The fact is that in order to learn or practice the art of concentration, we have to first realize we use it all the time, but only on things we mm-hmm. like. We like this book we're reading. We can be so concentrated. We don't hear the phone ringing. We don't hear someone talking to us. So we already have it as a skill. The thing we have to develop is the use of it where we don't mm-hmm. want to use it. So we have to take something we don't like Maybe we don't like to read poetry. Maybe we don't like to read science books. And decide, all right, I'm going to spend a few minutes. I'm going to concentrate on this thing. As we begin to do that, we begin to develop the ability to control concentration.
We think, rather than a book of poetry, we should take The Secret Doctrine. And
we should already be concentrating on that.
But it's true, we do concentrate, and we don't really realize. I mean, and it doesn't always have to be a good thing that we're concentrating on. It could be something that's uncomfortable as well, and we just kind of focus and worry it and just obsess on it. So there's a higher and a lower aspect of concentration as well, obsession being the lower one. Yes?
In line with that, there's a passage in The Voice of the Silence, and we won't get it exactly right, but it's something like, cease to listen and you will hear. Mm. Close your eyes and you will see. And it's a beautiful passage. Goes on from there, but it's talking about getting those lower distractions mm-hmm. of our everyday lives out of the way so that we can hear that still small voice, we can see and experience the spirit within. It will happen if we make it a habit to block out the distractions of the world.
And we want to put the warning out that we read in a lot of the literature on meditation that it has to be an active act of thought, that we can't be passive. I mean, we can try and distract distractions, to move them out of the way, but we don't want to clear our minds. We always want to be thinking about something higher. And we think we have a list, one of the it lists different things that we can think about. We can't find it, but it talks about using, a lot of the meditation books that we have, and we have the daily readings for Madame Blavatsky, Mr. Judge, and Robert Crosby that some people use as well. And then we have, of course, The Voice of the Silence in the Bhagavad Gita. So we do have these items that we can use to help us focus, because we want to be able to focus on something higher to help prevent those distractions from coming in. Yes?
If we think that what you meant was devotional books that are the seeds for meditation.
Yep. What did we say?
Meditation books, which I think everybody would go and look for. And the other thing is, you were speaking of the quotation books mm-hmm. of HPB and Judge and Crosby, and many students do use them as seeds for the day.
Do you have something?
I think toward the end of Pantanjali's, he talks about four aids to concentration. We don't remember what all four of them, but one of them he called muttering, and which is picking a phrase, a mantra, and repeating it to yourself. But mm-hmm. it's not just the repeating of the word, it's the comprehension of what those words mean. So that becomes like an ideation as well as a muttering, and therefore
mm-hmm.
you can expand upon it.
Yes, so on the idea of muttering, it's not just mindless repetition of something. It's something that we actually focus on. Yes?
One thing we find encouraging in writings is that the message there is wherever you are in your ability to concentrate and meditate, if you do it, you'll get better at it.
Mm-hmm.
And another one is you know, to make one's brain porous to the dictates of the soul. Well, now in the 21st century, there's no doubt that we build the gray matter of our brain by how we use it. So the mind, the metaphysical, affects the physical brain,
mm-hmm.
and the neurons build themselves and literally heals the brain or develops it in different ways depending on how we think. And that's all a matter of what did we come in here with and where are we,
mm-hmm.
you know, where are we, you know, what middle of the stream path are we on when we get here? So it reminds us of, you know, we can all place ourselves back in junior high school when, of course, there's always the one student in the class when we're given a reading assignment. He or she can read it, answer the questions, know it, and involve themselves in the class discussion as the leader of the discussion. Then there's the other one who, for all intents and purposes, is, you know, just as smart, so to speak, who literally is reading the words, but because he knows that he's going to have to deal with the bully after school, and he's dealing with his hormones because of who he's sitting next to, you know, he's not able to concentrate as much. But that's not an excuse to try, because he'll get better as he makes the effort.
Mm-hmm.
So it brings us to control, self-control and self-discipline. How does self-control and self-discipline play into this? And can we make a distinction between self-control and self-discipline?
The difference between self-control and self-discipline, was this in regards to that?
Yeah.
Yes.
If we recall karma, that all of our past efforts in lives that we can only imagine, the thousands of numbers of them, and how we've invested volition, feeling, emotion, passion, attachment in past actions and values and past meditation, then really the hope is in developing patience, self-pity to a certain way. The line on our reading for today that says, practice will develop in us the power to call on that will which is ours. So wherever we are in terms of our physical body, the astral, the brain, and the abilities at those levels to hold concentration, to be still in terms of nervousness or energy, whatever you want to call that, that's all karmic. And the hope is that practicing, making an effort, imagining what it would be to be self-controlled, what it would be to be able to still the body and the brain, that practice will eventually develop the power and the will that is conditionally ours is going to move. It's just we're each blooming in a different way, but according to the law.
Again, as was stated in the middle of the comment, we're looking at karmic restrictions or enhancements, as was stated in the previous comment. And we, in regards to practice, they say, what is it, 21 repetitions to make a new habit? So if we try and be persistent with it for 21 days, supposedly, then that becomes ingrained in our routines. And just as we've been talking before about how we concentrate during the day on things, we wonder if we could be more aware of those times when we are concentrating. So it's like, oh, I'm concentrating. And then maybe use those feelings and thoughts when we're sitting down trying to meditate. Because since we know that we, and that was something that was very interesting to us, is like, we didn't really consider that we do concentrate. And it is something, you know, when we're sitting down reading, you know, preparing for class, we are concentrating on the ideas, the readings, and how to pull things together. And during the day, even if we're watching like a documentary or something, we're staying attuned to that. We're concentrating on it. So there are ways we can bring that forward into a daily routine with concentration and meditation. Yes.
Yeah, one way that anybody can prove to themselves that they're pretty good at concentrating if they really want to is when if you're in the middle of making a nice big meal on the stove, sometimes that takes 20 minutes or a half hour, and you are concentrating on that food because you know how good it's going to taste, and you're going to do it right the first time because there are no second thoughts. That's the first. And the second, also, with regard to self-control and self-discipline, it helps us to remember that the difference is that self-control is, if I have a tendency to, the difference is if I don't want to do something that I know I should do, then I should control the tendency that I don't know. Right, if there's something I know I should do, and I want to fit it into my routine, then that's where discipline comes into place. And do it consistently, discipline yourself. Self-control, we think it has more to do with the tendencies that pull us away or distract us from this.
And we wonder in regards to self-control if that's more of a mental thing, whereas self-discipline is putting that into action. Yes?
The other thing is the whole issue of self-control and self-discipline. We also need to contemplate on what self is disciplining what self. If we're working on the lowest levels of personality, brain function, and we're concentrating on personal characteristics for immediate use, can we be focused at the same time on the spiritual self, an eternal perspective on a situation?
Thank you. In the back?
Doesn't that seem to be the biggest problem for any sincere student? We have two different lifetimes meditations. One is to get this wisdom, to use it, apply it, share it. The other is to live this personal life with the feelings that engenders and the closeness with other people. So we are trying to walk the line between those two. And we think that's the hardest thing for any student, to get the self-control, self-discipline between those two meditations.
And, that's one thing that we hear over and over again, is putting these ideas into practice in our daily lives and to help others. So there is a blending of the two, and that certainly is our motivation behind why we keep coming and why we keep participating, is to be, as we said in the beginning, better able to help and teach others and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Yes?
I think it's stated on the first principle that everything comes forward from within, outward, from within. I think we were told that if we can purify our mind and fill our heart with love, that we don't have to worry about this outer shell. It may change in the appropriate time, but we need to concentrate on that aspect of that we are eternal, and the fact that we are compassionate beings, and just apply that to our life and not worry about ourselves, but just try to, you know, worry about others.
The idea of concentrating on an inward growth and not be so concerned with the outer. And we have two wonderful examples in Madame Blavatsky and Mr. Judge, who suffered with physical disabilities and illnesses for so much of their lives, yet they continued to work for the philosophy. And we think of that and how one-pointed they were, how much they concentrated on doing what they knew to be right, which was to spread these ideas out, to pay it forward from what they had gotten from their teachers. So we can use them as examples, but we all know everybody who has physical illnesses, disabilities and whatnot, that when if we're not feeling well, it's very hard to concentrate on anything. So we can use them as examples of what can be done. Yes.
We haven't talked much about will, and it would seem if desire stands behind and fuels the will, isn't that the first step before the concentration, the meditation? Don't we have to take hold of our desires, as it says, change them into something higher, more altruistic, then wouldn't it be easier to concentrate and meditate because will is evident in everything we do. We breathe because of will. It's in all the kingdoms. So is it sort of the starting point, the bottom line?
Mm-hmm. Well, we were talking initially about prioritizing things to get rid of the distractions. And we would think that will, in that respect, would have a higher impetus from desire. That at that point, we think desire would be come from a higher point, from one's higher nature. So if the foundation then with desire is of a higher nature, the motive is pure, then will would be functioning from the same kind of level, and then we just kind of go up the ladder from there. But definitely desire has to be of a higher quality. Yes?
We think what that's related to is, whereas we always hear behind will stands desire for sure, the question is, to what degree is the individual in control of his desires? Because behind desire either kind of stands not so much, or, in the case of the adept, behind desire stands mind, controlling the desire, and therefore, we would think, controlling the will, so mm-hmm. does the adept. And to whatever degree anybody can do that, if they're thoughtful, mindful, reflective living,
mm-hmm.
Then we don't let our desires go crazy, and to that extent, do we direct the will toward the higher?
We think at that point, with mind and with desire behind will, it's interesting because we have to concentrate on doing just that. We have to focus on changing our desires from a lower to a higher level, and which in and of itself is raising the mind to a higher level as well. And we think, well, it's interesting because concentration would come in there as well, because we would have to be thinking and concentrating on changing our ideas and prioritizing. So things just kind of overlap each other too. Yes?
Mr. Judge makes a statement that we use our will, our of doing that. He says, we often sit in the sun. So close your eyes and imagine that sun. And you feel its warmth, you feel its, and begin to imagine what it is, what it does, where it goes. I mean, like expand your consciousness of yourself, because we are all a ray of that, and it rather makes us stop thinking about ourselves and peculiarities and so forth, but just to be and to focus on an idea that's more than an idea, it's a physical thing. And he says, and remember, even when the clouds are in the sky, the sun is still there.
Oh, that's the, yes, that sun, the spiritual sun. Imagination, we did want to bring that up as well. I mean, it's not mentioned in the reading, but as was stated, you know, our imagination, what is it, the king faculty, thank you. Because in our mind, that actually stands behind desire. Because one has to think about what one wants to do, which is the imagination, and then put it into action, we go with the desire and then will. Yes?
Well, there are two different things, really, desire and then the use of desire. We have to remember, universally, all evolution came forth because of desire. Desire is a universal principle that underlies everything. So it isn't wrong. It's our use of it that's pitiful. We're spiritual beings, and we act like miserly little starving creatures. So it's almost comical if you think about it. So if you start using your imagination the other way, really realizing I am Arjuna and Krishna at the same time, then hopefully our desires will begin to evolve.
Yes, thank you.
Going back to imagination for a moment, we saw a movie recently where the character is a writer, and there's a little girl who wants to be a writer, so she's trying to understand how he gets his ideas. And he kept telling her, look down the street, tell me what you don't see. And she couldn't get it. She finally got it. But it's the use of imagination, which was what he was teaching her, that allows us to realize we can do all of this. If we imagine ourselves concentrating and meditating and becoming one-pointed, we're fueling that desire, that fire. So it's part of the power of the mind that's necessary for us to realize we can do this.
And we think that just the desire, it in the beginning of the part for today, the part in the reading where it talks about somebody who just goes along their way and they're interested in material things, making money, making lots of friends, that sort of thing, and then every now and then might have a little moment of clarity. So, you know, realizing that maybe his life isn't the way it should be, but then something distracts him and he goes back to what he was thinking. So this is, we need to be able to, when that happens to us, that we kind of fall off the wagon, we need to recognize it, don't beat ourselves up about it, and then continue to do it, do what we know needs to be done.
Yeah,
Yes.
Where should we be striving from our desires to go from where to where? To what higher to the higher?
I'm sorry, what was it?
I'm not sure. I'm just trying to think how to ask this. I think it was said before that we should strive to have our desires go to a higher point. And I'm asking from where to where?
In regards to, let me rephrase the question.
In regard to our manifestation. Yes.
In regards to our desires,
yes.
Where do we need to go?
Yes, that's my question.
Did you want to?
The fact is that we're told you start where you are.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say in your own life, you only see your family. A desire then would be to start noticing the life around you, the clerk in the store, the people who live in your neighborhood, to begin to expand your own consciousness into the life and needs of others. So you build it by degree. You can't go from selfish to selfless. You have to work all the way through unselfish, and it's by degrees that you do it.
And we don't think that it's from here to there. You know, like, I'm going to start at the lowest and I'm going to end. How can one even think of an ending to one's desires? It, when you put it into action, those desires, when it goes in, when will picks that up, so to speak, and then things begin to happen and you begin to act on that will, it's like a feedback kind of a machine, because you'll see that you're working, that it works when you concentrate even a little tiny bit, and then, well, let's try something else, as was stated, to branch out, go get out of the box kind of a thing. And we think, too, that just knowing that we're all together, that we all have that spark, that we are that spark, of that deific essence, that we are all the same, then when we look at our neighbor and if they're acting in a bizarre fashion, we won't be that critical like we used to be. We're not going to jump on the phone to call 911, you know, somebody's throwing the trash out. But we will look at them and it's like, well, maybe they need to be, you know, told that the rest of the neighbors, you know, that kind of a thing. And we'll just branch out, as was said. Yes.
Well, that the question of you know, well, where am I now, and where should I desire to be next? That's the ultimate question that Arjuna has for Krishna. And Krishna's basic answer is, well, do what you think is the right thing to do. And that's the same, actually, in the ULT's definition. The lodge welcomes all who desire to fit themselves by studying otherwise to be the better able to help and teach other. But there's nobody here telling John Doe what he needs to do to fit himself. John Doe needs to be the student of John Doe and of theosophy and find out for himself. So to do so, he's got to concentrate on that. Perhaps, you know, we've heard things in this discussion such as will and feeling and thought and imagination, and these are all powers of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're talking about. Take all of those powers and focus them on whatever it is that we're trying to focus on. Just like a general in the army, when he finds a big hornet's nest of the enemy, he takes his field artillery and his choppers and his tanks, and he focuses all the powers of his military on that. So too would we take the powers of our mind and focus on whatever it is we're trying to illuminate ourselves about, or the direction in which we're growing.
To go along with that, the article even talked about how, let's see, it is a Western cry for a curriculum, a course, a staked path, a line, and ruled by inches and links. So the philosophy, which is why we encourage people to read on their own, the philosophy is teaching us how to think out of the box. And people will notice once we start putting these ideas into our daily lives, people will start noticing that we are acting and reacting differently. So by people noticing that, it's like a confirmation for ourselves that maybe we are doing something right. And it's only little steps, but we have to do it on our own. Nobody's going to tell us how to do it. Yes, in the back.
Yeah, there's a quote by a guy named Carl Ward, who was, I believe, the past president of General Motors. And he said, though, no one can go back and make a brand new start. Anyone can start from now and make a brand new ending.
Mm. Yeah, as we said in the beginning, you know, don't regret the past, but you can make a new future for yourself. Yes?
And I'm assuming that Shakespeare kind of summed it up. He said, what is a man but the compilations of his thoughts, dreams, and aspirations?
Yes, exactly. What is a man but his thoughts and dreams and aspirations? And you know, we need to pull all those things together, it was said, and try and focus them and concentrate on what we're doing. Yes?
Even though this is a inward journey and one we each have to take alone, we find great help and comfort along the way from other human beings. Like mind, like energy, like understanding, and where there's a nurturing atmosphere of acceptance. So these ideas can be expressed freely, and not they aren't personal ideas, mm-hmm. but they are impersonal and universal. And that there is no goal in mind other than to be the best that we can. Strive to do that and not look to the future or not look to the past. Just be right here. Keep on trying.
And not to compare yourself to the progress or lack of progress of other people, because we've talked about karma and we're all sharing each other's karma in a way, and just need to realize that, you know, we need to worry about ourselves in a way. Yeah, is this a follow-up?
Well, yeah, well, the comment alludes to the fact that it was personal. It was a personal comment about feeling a certain way or doing something. You know, that oftentimes we have to just let it go and look at it impersonally,
mm-hmm.
and try to explain mm-hmm. it in that manner. And that alone elevates the conversation, because it takes the feeling nature sort of out of it and puts it aside,
mm-hmm.
and you're able to understand much more than if it was simply a personal statement about something.
Yes, thank you. If this is just a comment, we've got about 15 seconds.
No one can stop you from being better than
mm-hmm.
you.
Or be bad, but you. So, thank you. And everybody go out and concentrate.